Today is Sunday, November 28, 2021. This is part 24 of a Grand Canyon oral history with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
Doing great, Tom. Good to hear from you.
You too. Thank you so much for letting us conduct this oral history. May we have your permission to do this over the telephone?
Yes, you may.
Thank you so much. Last time you took us on a wonderful hike from Saddle Mountain down into Nacoueep and all the way to the Bright Angel Trail in the spring of 2008. And now, what do you have up next for us?
The next hike that we did in late October, November of 2008 was another threesome, Art Christensen and Bruce Grubbs and myself, all getting together once again. And this was to hike from Crystal down to Shinimo and make a big loop that those guys mostly had not done any of. I'd done some of this, 30 or 40% of it, I guess, when I was in various hikes that I'd done myself, right?
Okay.
And but we were very interested in what the views would be like from the Tonto platform, walking from Crystal over to Shinimo, and I was particularly interested in exploring the west side of Scorpion Ridge, because I kind of had myself convinced that it might be a shortcut up to the Scorpion if a fault ravine could be found to traverse through the Red Wall.
Yep.
So that was one of the objectives that we had, and it started out pretty nice. I mean, it was a great trip overall, it was warm though. That was unseasonably warm. I guess Bruce said that most of the time we were out, it was about 10 degrees over normal. So that's kind of significant, especially when you're like me, you're coming from the north and you're not really used to the heat that much.
Right.
But so anyways, we left Flagstaff, the three of us, in the morning of the October 25th, and we drove up in Art's Impreza up to Marble Canyon Lodge and had our breakfast there. And actually, my notes tell me that we inquired in Vera. They told us that Vera was no longer working there. I've mentioned Vera in a number of earlier discussions we've had, because she always was our waitress when we had breakfast at the lodge.
Yeah.
And we had a good rapport with her. She had a great personality. So it was a little, disappointing, but these things happen,
mm-hmm.
particularly in the restaurant industry. And of course, now the lodge is totally revamped, right? It's a totally different operation. So anyways, we had our breakfast there and then drove up to Jacob Lake, filled up the car, and proceeded down into the park to the road that goes out to the basin, and took that road and followed it up and over Crystal Ridge in the Impreza. And, the car just dealt with Crystal Ridge, no problem. Now, I've been back in there a number of times more recently, since 2008, and it's been really rough going up Crystal Ridge, particularly coming up from the west. And that may be the difference, because this time we went up from the east. Well, of course, on the return, when we went at the end of the trip, we reversed that. So anyways, it was nice not to have any issues with the vehicle, right?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so we parked the car right there in the vicinity of Crystal Ridge, and then walked, it's about 2 miles to the west, and then we walked to the ridge trying to get down, or heading for, the west arm of Crystal Creek.
Okay.
And so this would be the arm that goes down west of the Dragon and the Dragon Head. And it's a fairly easy descent, straightforward, just a long, continuous descent. But there's a lot of brush in the gullies.
I was going to say, I've looked over the edge there and went, ooh, it's a brushy forested world down there of manzanita and all kinds of
locust.
Locust, yeah, with thorns on them, and oh boy.
Yeah, it was pretty rough going, and we overshot the rim start initially because we're coming at it from the woods, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know exactly where you are, but we could see that we needed to go back a little bit to the west to get into the main drainage. And fortunately, we're going down, right? Because gravity was on our side. And when you're dropping down through all this vegetation, and it's just quite literally, you know, you're like hanging on to branches and limbs and pushing your way down through the maples and the locusts and trying to avoid the thorns. And it was pretty, pretty fatiguing. Mm. And, but we worked our way down, and we got to the top of the red wall, and it eased there a little bit. And if you follow the red wall rim to the south and west, so you're on the west side of the drainage, and you go around a little corner, there's a nice fault ravine.
Okay.
And that gets you right down through the red wall. And I don't know if you've been up in this area.
No.
But, it's pretty straightforward. And nice. Descent, right? And at this point, the vegetation's starting to lighten up a bit, you know. You know, it's interesting because we had all that vegetation, but we didn't see any water.
Huh.
There was no flowing water or anything like that. So it's just xeric vegetation, I guess, adapted to warm climate that fills in these drainages. And there's a lot of shade, too, you know.
Okay.
Except for the height of midday, you get a lot of shade in part of the drainage. So anyways, we got down through the red wall, and we went upstream. We decided to hike upstream up Crystal, so we dropped our packs and just hiked upstream about 45 minutes to the dry fall there. And it's, you know, there was obviously no way to get through, so we reversed and came back down. And this was just exploring for information, right?
Yeah.
And we came back down to where we dropped our packs and camped.
Jim,
was
there water in the creek bed there, or does that happen downstream? What's the deal with the water there?
No, there was no water right there that we encountered, nothing flowing. So we had water for an overnight,
okay,
expecting to encounter flow downstream.
Got it.
Yeah, it's quite a ways, a few miles down from there.
Okay.
Is where we encountered reliable water. So, one year I went, this was early on in the 70s, I'm not sure we even talked about this, but I did a hike up Bright Angel Creek on the north side of the river, and hiked up from above Roaring Springs, followed up the creek, and of course the old Bright Angel Trail, or
yes,
the old Kaibab Trail, came down through there.
That's right.
And so where the trail junction headed, or where the trail headed up to go up to the rim, I stayed in the creek bed in Bright Angel Creek. And what a wonderful little hike that was.
Oh, yeah.
There were aspen in there that had been cut by the beavers.
Huh.
And it was just such a beautiful little 2-mile walk through the red wall. So,
cool.
I always love to go up these red wall drainages just to see what surprises might be up there, you know.
Yeah.
But this one was pretty uneventful, the one in West Arma Crystal. But, then it narrows in, and it's always impressive. So,
uh-huh.
So we scraped out, three spots to sleep on the gravel there in this gully here at the base of the red wall. I mean, it was tight in there, very tight, with lots of vegetation and whatnot, but I was so tired. I slept so well, and in fact this whole trip I had pretty good sleep the whole time, so this was a good start to the trip. So the next morning we get up, and we're at the base of the red wall, and so the objective now is to get down Crystal and to the river, and or as far as we could. We didn't expect to get to the river.
Okay.
But We then started down the red wall, and we're proceeding south there. And we get to the drainage. There's a minor drainage that comes down from the west side of the Dragon, kind of between the Dragon and the Dragon Head. And, of course, I like to go up these things to see what I can find, and unexpected climb outs or things like that. So I left the two guys to continue on. Art and Bruce, they continued downstream, and I dropped my backpack and then went up this drainage. And it was quite interesting because I didn't get out, of course, but there was, in the north side, the drainage splits at one point, and I went up the south side of it and couldn't see any obvious way out there, just dry falls. But then I went up higher in the North Fork, and I went back in as far as I could and to a slot there, and there was no way that I could climb out. Somebody might be able to. But at one place in this slot, there was a crack system, and then there was this log that was perched up there, at about 65-degree angle or something like that, that one could theoretically climb up the log and get into the cracks up above, And I thought, what are the chances that this was put here by an Aboriginal or an earlier hiker, as a bypass? And I didn't have the nerve to try the log, And I also thought that it looked very suspicious because the way this log was positioned, it would be very hard to conceive of it falling in there as a result of flooding. What I mean?
Okay, sure.
And so it did look like it had been pushed up by a human. So it's kind of an interesting thing to think about,
Was it protected from the weather at all, or was it out exposed to the elements?
Oh, no, it was very protected because it's inside of a very, very narrow slot at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, so you should go up there and you'll probably just scamper right up this.
Yeah. No. I'll trust your description here.
Yeah, okay. So anyways, I turned around and came back down and grabbed my pack and then started down, following the two of them who were an hour and a half or 2 hours ahead of me, I guess, at that point. And eventually, we all convened down towards the junction of the drainage that comes down from the west of Dragon Head. And in this area, the water was, we had a reasonable flow there. And so it's intermittent. At that time, it was intermittent, but there were lots of cottonwoods around and it was a nice place to take a break. So we both kind of relaxed, or all three of us relaxed there together and, shot the bull and talked about things and kind of recovered from the heat of the day. Hmm. So we continued, after the break, we just worked our way slowly down Crystal, taking our time. We had fairly heavy packs, and the day went fairly slow, and we were down into pretty deep into Crystal. It's fairly straightforward walk hiking, There's very minor bypasses in a couple of places, but that's it. So it's nothing to really worry about. And we got down to the drainage that comes down from between Mencius and Confucius temples.
Okay.
And it's fairly late in the day, and we were pretty tired, so we thought, well, let's just camp here for the night, because we found a nice spot. And it's a good thing we did, because the next day we got up, and there was nothing, no place to camp, all the way down to the river, which is about another hour and a half or 2 hours, I guess, down. I'm not quite sure how long it would take to get down there, but... But it was fortuitous that we decided to stop at this spot because it was a really great little spot in the bed of Crystal and pretty much the last one till you get down to the river. So.
Nice.
And so the next, again, another great sleep too because you're laying on the nice fine gravel in the creek bed. So the next day we shouldered our packs and. Art and I had been through Crystal before, and I'd been through there on my own, and I'm not sure if Bruce had ever been down Crystal, but, it's a nice, easy, meandering walk. It's fun to do. You get, good views up through the Tapetes periodically, et cetera. So, a nice morning's walk down to the river, and we got to Crystal, and the objective here was to walk downriver to Tuna Creek and then even farther to the next drainage, which we call Willie's
dun,
Necktie.
Dun, dun, goes the music in the background.
Okay, right. Yeah, and so we did take a nice break at the west end of the Crystal Delta because of the heat was kind of, intense for us. So we rested there.
Did you guys have any beta about what it's like to get downstream to tuna along the river versus what it's like to go overland on the Tapeets? Did you guys have any beta about that?
Well, we did. We had the data that I had, because when I, in 76, I think it was, I took this float trip with Doug Rickard,
right,
and some other people, and they dropped me at Tuna. That's where I joined them at Quaggan's, or 60 Mile, actually,
mm-hmm,
and floated with them for a number of days. And then they camped, I believe, at Tuna, somewhere in the vicinity of Tuna.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I said, okay, it's time for me to go, because my car was up on the plateau somewhere. And I knew I could hike up Crystal, right? So
you had done that already. Okay.
I had done that already, and I had no recollection that there was anything challenging, you know, from that, based on that 1976 hike. And also,
how old were you in 1976?
Well, I was 22.
Okay, so this is about 30 years later.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. 30 years later. Yeah, it's hard to believe. You know, sometimes you think about these events, and they seem like just yesterday, relative to each other. But then you think, oh my goodness, that was 3 decades, a third of a century between those two hikes.
Mm.
Anyways, the important point I want to make is that I'm very precise, as precise as I can when I will draw a line on the map indicating where I've hiked, right? Because I try to show if I went high to get up above a buttress,
right,
or around a buttress, I would note that,
you know,
with the line going up above the river, right? And so the line that I'd had on my map from that 76 hike was just right on the river. So, we started down that, and we started heading down there from Crystal, and you get forced up.
Yep.
That's the way we were working anyway,
yep,
you know? And we went like 600, 700 feet up above the river,
yep,
I mean, quite a ways up. And it was not just simple climbing and hiking, you know. There was, it was fairly technical scrambling,
yep,
with a lot of exposure. And we got these big backpacks on, so it was slow going. And
mm-hmm,
I think that's the way to describe it, slow going. I mean, we had to be very careful. And at one point, close to the end of that climb around, climb up above, I dropped my hiking stick.
Ooh.
Yeah, and so these are sticks that Art custom makes. They're simple, but they're very durable and very effective. And I happened to just drop it, and it went clambering down. Now when we finally got down to the river, I was able to walk upstream, and I actually found and retrieved the stick. So
cool.
That was kind of a fun little aside there. I remember when I was up at Wheeler Point, I dropped my stick, and it went crashing down into the drainage gully there. And of course, I never was able to get to it because it was totally inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was good having that stick for the rest of this hike too. That was another thing because as we'll talk about here. Anyways, it was a totally different hike this time. And when I got dropped off in 76, I just kind of waltzed up the river. This is my recollection. And then just bolted up Crystal and went all the way to the rim in one day, it was a different time, I guess. And I was wondering if the water level might have had something to do with it. And you would probably know. I mean, you've probably been through there many times.
I have been there enough to know that's one of the hardest sections to go a short distance between Crystal and Tuna in a schist. I mean, sure, there are other very difficult schist sections. It's all difficult. But that area is, that little run right there is, you got to go way up high, and there's a couple different ways. You don't have to go super high. You go medium high, but it's all exposed, and it's really, that's a good challenge.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't want to just take that, hike with anybody. It was you want to have secure partners you can count on,
That's right.
So But I remember thinking at the time, this was quite a bit different than my recollection.
It gets harder doing it in the dark.
Yeah, I'll bet. You're saying that from experience, I guess.
I am. But with a light, you know, it's possible, but I do not recommend it.
No, that sounds horrible, because, you know, you always need the benefit of the distant view, right, to make sure you got some way, you know, the route you're picking out doesn't cliff out somewhere ahead of you. So, well, my commendations to you on the night traverse of
I don't recommend it.
Okay. I think that's coming across strongly in this recording.
How long did it take you guys to get through that section from Crystal down to
Tune? I think it was probably about 2 hours.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was quite some, and it's only about a mile, you know. And I might have the notes recorded precisely, but I'm not going to look it up.
But
certainly it was time consuming, you know. Uh-huh. And we did not expect to take that much time on it. So eventually we got through it and down to the mouth of Tuna. And, of course, Art and I had been here now in 15 years or so before, when we did our traverse of Mencius and Confucius, and we went to the parachutist camp.
Mm-hmm.
So we had come down into Tuna and then gone down river from Tuna. Well, it was the other way around. We went from down into Tuna and then hiked around past the parachutist camp into the drainage to the west of it, and then went down that and then came up the river from that drainage to Tuna. So, you know, we were on familiar ground again, is my point.
Yeah.
So it was pretty straightforward from that point on. And so we worked our way down to the drainage the drainage of doom, or whatever you guys call it. And by Willie's Necktie Rapids.
Right.
And so our plan, I think Steck in his Loops book said that one could climb out either way up the drainage, and that's where we had seen that and accessed that route ourselves when Art and I went in there and visited the parachutist camp. But we also knew from Steck's notes that there was the climb out right at the mouth of this drainage. And so that, because it was fairly late in the day, and besides, you have to climb up fairly high to get around an 80-foot dry fall, pretty mm-hmm. low in that drainage.
Okay.
And so we were up on the west side to bypass that dry fall, and we thought we could just go right up here, straight up through the schist to the Tapetes,
uh-huh.
and then there's the supposed Steck route there, and then we'd be on top, as opposed to our original plan, which was to go continue up the drainage, which would require dropping back down in elevation and going up the drainage to the easy Tapetes breaks farther upriver, up the drainage.
Yes.
So we elected to go with the more direct route. And I'm glad we did, because it's so much fun.
Mm.
I don't know if you've done that, but...
No,
not
there.
You go up the schist. It's steep,
mm-hmm.
but straightforward, and then you get into one of these classic Tapetes chimney systems,
nice.
You know, where you're back inside of a deep chimney,
right.
and there's all these horizontal ledges,
yes.
you know, to step up on, push up on,
yep.
and you go up, of course, in our case, it was getting pretty dark, but late in the day, and we actually had headlamps on at this point in the hiking, and of course, you're inside this chimney, and it's even darker,
yeah,
right?
That's
with less less ambient light coming in there. So we're working our way up these ledges, and you get onto kind of a pillar. That you get onto the top of a pillar, and you're separated from the main Tapetes cliff by like a 3.5 or 4 foot step across, right? And it's a lot of exposure there, and if you slip or if a hole breaks, you know, it would be very problematic. And once you do the step across, then you have to do a little bit of about a 5 or 6 foot face climb.
Hmm.
I mean, it's all pretty easy stuff, but the exposure and commitment is real serious,
right.
you know. And of course, anybody listening to this tape, don't go that way, you know, unless you're really experienced.
Uh-huh.
It's much easier to just, I think, overall, it's much safer to just continue upstream, up that drainage to get to the easier to Pete's bypass up there. So, anyways, we managed the climb, no problem. And because it was late then, at that point, we just camped right there on the Tapete's ledges, right at the top of that climb. A nice little spot. You know, as Tapete's campsites almost always are, perfect, right?
And you guys flat had to carry water for that dry camp up there.
That's right, we did. We had filled up at the river.
Okay.
And not only that dry camp, but we didn't have any sure water until we got to, well, we figured we could get some in Monadnock Amphitheater because we'd heard about a spring in there, I think it was. Anyways, I'm not sure, but we felt like there was probably pretty good water chance in Monadnock Amphitheater. And then, of course, from there, it's another half a day to Bass Camp, right,
right.
Otounta Canyon. So, yeah, we had, I think I had like 10 liters of water, so coming up out of Willie's necktie. So,
okay.
You know, it was a full load.
Yeah.
And, but we needed it, so we carried it. And so the next day was kind of like going to be, I think, in my mind, this was going to be one of the highlights of the trip, the next couple of days, this traverse on the Tonto. I mean, all of us have hiked in our career, you know, the Tonto Trail on the south side of the river, around the Gem Canyon,
mm-hmm.
you know, from Bass mm-hmm. Trail to Boucher, and
right.
it's in and out and in and out, and you have these great views up to the North Rim, and you know, it's many places you get close to the river and you look across, it's almost like you can throw a stone over there to the north side. And there's a similar hiking terrace over there, but, you know, nobody goes over there, right? And that's why we were so jazzed about being in this area, because, you know, we'd seen it so often in our passages, but kind of knew really nothing about it. So, I guess, of course, this is a Steck loop route. It's not like this is, you know, we didn't have any information on this or whatever. So, it was still known country, but for us, brand new. So, anyways, we started hiking, and immediately we ran into this problem that I encountered on my 1973 long hike from Hat Canyon to Phantom, and that's the prickly pear that gets to be like, 6 inches high off the shale, and it's just challenging, very challenging to have to walk, you know, find a path through this prickly pear, and so you wind up walking back and forth when you want to be just hiking a straight line, you know. So it's wandering back and forth, trying to avoid getting thorns in your feet and keeping your sanity and that stuff. So there was a lot of that. It was slow going as we went around the Scorpion, but we just plugged away at it as we had to do, and we got to the canyon, which we called the Emerald Canyon. I think this must be a Steck name. I'm not sure it's actually formally named that on the maps, but this is basically the drainage that's opposite LeConte Plateau.
Okay.
And it comes down from the drainage heads in the Red Wall up on the Scorpion Ridge.
Okay.
So we stopped there at midday and found some shade, and the two boys, I call them Bruce and Art, hung out in the shade, and this is where I wanted to try this Red Wall climb, which would potentially get me up on the Scorpion Ridge.
So
right?
Are you still within the arms of the Scorpion, or have you crossed the west ridge, the west arm of the Scorpion, and are now approaching it from the west, heading east?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. The latter option. We have gone up around the Pincers,
yep.
Which we did fairly early in the morning. You know, and each of these days when we were hiking on the Tonto, we set our alarms to get up in the dark so that we could get hiking at first light and maximize the cool part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point at Emerald Canyon, we are pretty far north of the main mass of the Scorpion, summits, right? The Supai summits.
Okay.
There's a very large summit of Supai. It's unnamed, which is on the Sagittarius Ridge. It's pretty much the south end, I guess, okay, of the Sagittarius Ridge.
Right.
And of course, the Sagittarius Ridge drops down to the Scorpion, which is essentially a red wall feature with some some minor Supai on top at the top of it. So, so at this point, we were to the north of the Scorpion, and then I was going in to the east to approach the west side of this red wall.
As you walked around the east pincher, what did it look like? Because I never looked at it. I've dinked around on the west one. What does the east one look like?
As far as a route?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, my recollection is not too... No, I don't have any recollection of it. So my thinking at the time would have been, you know, why even try,
okay,
right?
Fair enough.
Did you say that the west one goes?
No. But having dinked around on it, looking for a route, and getting denied, I was like, well, I wonder what the east arm's like. What the east pincer's like. It would be the east side of the east pincer, because the west side, you get a good view of that from the west pincer, and it's a no-go. But, you know, maybe there's something happening on the east side of that thing.
Right. Right. Well, I'm looking at the map right now, and the east side looks a little bit more precipitous than the west side.
That's probably why you guys just walk right past it.
Yeah. Yeah. You mind if I ask you how you got up to the West Pincer, where you dinked around?
104 and a half mile. We did a layover there on a long winter river trip, and hiked up the schist through the Tapetes, and then walked back up river, and then went up probably you're going to tell me what you did there. And
Yeah. Okay, so
and then walk back. Did a day walk over there?
I see. So 104.5. See, I don't think in terms of river miles, and so I don't have that plotted on my map. But I'm assuming that's probably downstream from Turquoise a little ways.
Yeah, it's called Wannabe Ruby.
Okay.
So it's above Ruby.
Okay.
There's this little side canyon comes in from the Monadnock side or from the Sagittarius side. And it doesn't have a named rapid there, but it has a little rapid, and there's a little camp there, and there's a nice way up through the...
Oh, okay. Well, that may be what we encounter later on. So it may be farther along the river than I thought. Anyways, we won't spend any more time on this, but that's interesting to know that, you know, you then did this, some of this Tonto hiking yourself in trying to get up to the Scorpion. So... in any event, I'm trying to come at it a little bit farther north now, the north side of the Scorpion.
Yep.
And so if you check your geological map, you'll see that there's a fault trace that runs parallel to the Sagittarius Ridge and basically separates the Scorpion Ridge from the Sagittarius Ridge.
Mm.
And that fault trace, you know, cuts through the red wall there and disrupts the strata. And so my thinking was that where that trace continues a little bit farther to the north and forms the west side of Sagittarius Ridge, there might be a break there. So I had scoped this out, you know, on several previous hikes from the west side of the river. So I headed up there and started poking around, and unfortunately I couldn't make a go of it, right? So it's sometimes you get to a situation where there's another option that might go, but I really got to get back to my buddies.
Did you get up on the pincer enough to get to the top of the ridge, though, below the top of the red wall, and get a view of the bowl made by the pincers?
No, not at all. No, this is even farther north. If you think of the Scorpion, the pincers as being the head, right?
Mm-hmm.
The pincers emanate from the head, and then there's all this ridge system, red wall ridge system, capped by Supai to the north of that,
correct,
which would be the body,
okay,
and presumably the tail. So this is somewhere up by the tail,
got
right?
It. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so I'm pretty
north.
Far north.
All right, got it.
Yeah, but you know, I was still hoping that there would be some way to get through the red wall. And then, you know, either run up to that major summit on the south end of Sagittarius Ridge, or, you know, run up, as I so flippantly say, onto the Scorpion Ridge from the north, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a long shot, but it was worth a try. And again, you know, it's more about the exploration, right?
Yeah.
Just seeing what's there. And you never know when you might find something that,
absolutely right,
that the Aboriginals, you know, might have used, right? So, and speaking of which, well, that's a little bit farther along. We did see a mezcal pit. That was the only trace of indigenous culture on this whole run from Tuna to Hotalta that we saw, anyway. So
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So, anyways, I came back down with disappointment in my eyes, I guess, and rejoined Bruce and Art, and then we continued along, and the Tonto. It's a short distance, half a mile or so from this Emerald Canyon, to get into the Monadnock Amphitheater drainage.
Okay.
And this, if I understand what you were just saying to me about 104.5, this may be in that area, because you can drop down into the Precambrian there, off the Tapiz, fairly straightforward.
Right.
And then work your way around on drainages, and at one point we got to a saddle, which is east of the drainage of Monadnock Amphitheater. It's in the, we're down in the Precambrian here, and we thought there was supposed to be water down in the bed of this drainage, and I think that was from the Steck notes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of late in the day, but we decided to go down into the drainage to look for this water, because we were pretty much out at this point. And so we went down and went even farther downstream to the big dry fall there, and there was no water.
Okay.
So we knew we had seen when we got to that little saddle above where we dropped down into Monadnock. I'm calling this the Monadnock drainage, okay, because it doesn't have a name, but it drains Monadnock Amphitheater.
Okay.
And we had seen before we dropped down that one could just shoot straight down to the river in this gully, right? And so we had to drop our packs down in Monadnock Valley there, grab our water bottles, and in the fading light, go back up to the saddle, and then go down to the river like 700 feet to fill up,
right,
and then come back up and go back down to where our backpacks were in the main drainage.
Got
so,
it.
I remember there being a nice little beach where we were able to get down and access the river.
Okay.
So I'll have to look at the river mileage map and see if that lines up with 104.5.
Okay.
But in any event, we had nice cool water, fortunately, and we had a reasonable night's camp in that valley as well.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
And you know, it's interesting too. When I was a young student at University of Arizona studying geology, of course, I'd already started hiking in Grand Canyon, and I knew a lot of the topography at that point. And you know, I knew about Monadnock Amphitheater, but I didn't really know what it meant until I became a geology student and realized, oh, Monadnock, you know, I learned that a Monadnock is a topographic high that the ocean beach would have filled in around, you know. And that's exactly what the geology in this area is.
Oh, interesting.
It of course, you know, wherever you have this Precambrian sticking up and the Tapiz present, you know, you have this opportunity. It's basically islands, right?
Right.
High points of Precambrian rock that stuck up above the Cambrian Sea,
right,
and so the sandstone would form its beaches around the margins.
Yeah, the supergroup islands.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was just kind of neat to be in this place, right?
Cool. Yeah.
Having learned that geology and learned what it meant, and to know that there was this place in Grand Canyon called Monadnock Amphitheater.
Mm.
I think the original Monadnocks are features in New England, actually, and southern Quebec.
Huh.
That's where they were originally named for. So, but anyways, fun place to be geologically. And the next morning, then we hiked up this drainage, And you hike up about a mile and a half or so, and then there's an easy, you know, climb out through the Tapetes to get back onto the Tonto. Hmm. So it's, again, fairly easy but tedious walking from here around to Hotauta.
Yep.
And, again, we took our time. But there was, I remember there were really nice deer trails right along the edge of the Tapetes.
Huh.
And there's great views there.
Just
maybe this
say.
Is a stretch that you've hiked.
No, not. I mean, we've not that point right there, but getting close. We're going to link up with you because we've gone up to Evans Butte from Hotauta.
Right. Okay.
And you're going to come down that break through the Tapetes there.
Yep. Yep. So okay. So, anyways, at the time, I was kind of marveling at how nice this trail was.
Hmm.
And I was thinking, well, it seems better than a deer trail, you know?
Hmm.
It just seems like it's got a higher degree of construction. When I say that, I just kind of mean ingenuity and thought going into laying it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the best deer trail I ever saw was up Nankoweap Mesa.
Hmm.
And got there's switchbacks in there. It's just unbelievable, right?
Huh.
And so, I mean, for all I know, that could have been laid out by Walcott.
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, but anyways... This was the second best, right?
Mm,
and so it was very interesting walking, and I thought, I wonder maybe if Bass had put a trail into Monadnock Amphitheater going prospecting for, you know, his asbestos and whatever.
That is very, very possible.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that might explain why it was so nicely preserved and
mm-hmm.
and laid out until we got to the drop-off into Hotauta,
huh.
Because that, where we went down, it was a fairly steep, slippery talus slope of Tapetes boulders, etc., and it seemed at the time that it would be very difficult to put a trail up through that for a
We were
for
a little further
mule.
To the east. So, not far, but just a little further east. This is a nice little easy kind of walk-up, sort of ramp bowl kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. So maybe that's where they could have come up
mm-hmm.
if there was
Absolutely.
A trail.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the way you came up to get to Evans Butte.
Right.
Uh-huh. Nice. Well, I definitely got to get back into that area because I want to do that route you did to get
mm-hmm.
up to Evans Butte.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been up Evans Butte, but it'd be nice to go up that route
that way.
To get,
yeah.
you know, just to connect mm-hmm. that way. And plus, I think I've mentioned to you before, the minor summit that you cross over on top of the red wall there
yes.
before you go to Evans Butte.
Right.
So you do your ascent of the red wall on that west end of the ridge there, and that summit when you're down on the river going down river, and you're floating through past say Turquoise and Ruby, and you look up at that summit, and it's very imposing. I mean, it's very I have a couple photographs, and it's like a huge butte. I mean, what you're seeing is the expression of the red wall.
Right, you're seeing this red wall fin, which is the west side of Monadnock.
Yes, exactly. So, anyways, it's always been in my mind as a beautiful summit to try and get up on top of, even though there's not much of the actual summit there. So,
right.
So, anyways, eventually, you know, hopefully, I'll get into that.
Cool.
Into that area, and this whole Shinumo Amphitheater. I mean, there's so much to see and do in there,
yes.
and I really would like to spend a lot more time
yeah.
from Hakatai all the way, you know, the whole region in there. So, anyways, we worked our way down into the Bass Camp area and started looking at all the exotica there, right?
Okay.
You know,
yep.
platforms. We looked at the cable car crossing, that's
right.
pretty neat to look at and try and figure out the operation there, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been, Art and I had been to the south side in our Bass to Boucher hike, I think in 76. Yeah, that's right, the 76 hike.
Okay.
And so this was kind of fun to connect up with that, right,
yeah.
even though the cable's not there anymore. And so... we spent much of the afternoon there poking around, and it's fairly easy to get around because the river runner trails and it's
yes.
all
yeah.
it's all you know, low elevation or low topography. So, so we did. We kind of worked our way over into Basque, into Shinimo Creek, and we wound up camping just above the mouth of Burro Canyon.
Okay.
And we had been through here, the three of us, when we did our circumnavigation of Powell Plateau in the late 90s, and but we came down from the Tapiz at that time early in the morning because we had been benighted just south of Fan Island there up on the Tonto platform, and running, you know, short of Shinimo Creek. So this was again returning to old familiar ground, and the next day after that camp, we didn't even really spend much time in the Bass, you know, poking around there because we'd done that a number of times before.
Right.
So
right.
We continued up Shinimo and left the North Bass Trail there junction and continued up the drainage. And there was, I remember there was just before you get to that junction where the North Bass Trail comes down, there's Steck had noted this. I think he called it an eye granary. Up on the cliff on the east side of Shinimo Creek,
okay.
And this is above the Bass Camp area.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw that up there, and I said, "Well, I'm going to go up there, guys, and you can continue." And it's just a, you know, a short jaunt to go up there. So, so I ran up there, and I thought, I'm looking at this place, and I'm thinking, why would you put the effort into building this, you know? This little granary, it's just in the middle of nowhere at the end of a cliff, and I don't know, it just doesn't seem very, very sensible. And then I started thinking, well, maybe this is some sort of a meditation spot, right? And the granary was not necessarily for storing grain, but other important artifacts, you know, who knows. But there is a fantastic view there. That's why I kind of twigged on this possibility, because you have a tremendous view. You're up on this cliff face, and that you've traversed to up at this long ramp, and you know you're looking straight down onto the creek, and then you have the whole north rim view open to the to the north. So spectacular spot, and I can see where somebody would sit there, and as I did, I did for 15 minutes, I guess, and they might sit there for hours, right? So, anyways, an interesting little side hike there, and at this point, you know, we're continuing up Shinimo Creek, and it's fairly straightforward. There's plenty of water, right, as you know,
right,
and lots of opportunity for slips. I know we all had a slip on that stretch of the creek, and so you know, our objective here was to get out.
You're working your way to Merlin's and Modred's abysses.
Yeah, well, that's right. We're still down at the main the confluence of White Canyon and Shinimo, right?
Right.
And then we're working our way up Shinimo.
Because White takes off north with the trail. You guys are heading into really difficult country with a backpack because it's narrow and rocky and brushy, and there's a huge creek in the middle of this little slot canyon thing. You've been in here before in 76, and it wasn't a lot of fun then.
No, that's right. It wasn't, and but that was coming in from at that point. I was coming in from the Tonto, and I headed which one is it here? I guess it's Shinimo Creek. Shinimo goes up and splits into Modred and Merlin.
Right.
And I actually came around Shinimo on the Tonto and went way up Merlin before I could cross it.
Got it.
Before
okay.
I could cross the creek. So I hadn't actually been on this stretch of the creek before.
All right.
And quite honestly, my recollection is that it was a fun little walk hiking up Shinimo Creek. You know, I mean, maybe there'd been some flooding in there and taken out a lot of the nasty vegetation. I mean, here and there were places you had to push through, but lots of walking along, you know, ledges and that slope down into the creek. And you know, it was a fine little walk in my recollection. So I don't remember any challenges or difficulties.
Good.
Except I did record in my notes that I took a spill, you know, in trying to reconnoiter a crossing something. So, you know, it's difficult. You got to be careful, as you do pretty much anywhere in the canyon. Yeah. So, but it was certainly nice to have that water, you know.
Yes.
And of course, we follow the water up to where the Flint drainage joins Shinimo.
Yep.
And of course, the water is in Shinimo. And
right.
So Flint is not, it's much more dry than Shinimo. And we filled up a lot of water capacity right at the junction of Flint and Shinimo, because we anticipated that we're going to need it to get up to the rim and back to our car.
And how was your crossing of Shinimo Creek?
It was, I have to say, it was uneventful.
Good.
I don't remember anything challenging or problematic about it, except, I mean, I think there was some wading, you know. It's not like we stayed totally dry on this.
And this is November, and the water level is way down from the spring runoff.
I think so. I mean, I know what it's like in spring, right? Because when I went through there in 73 and had to cross Shinimo in March.
In full flood.
It was actually terrifying. I think, you know, I think we talked about that.
Yeah,
I got to the other side of crossing, you know, on this log, and I just broke down and started, crying on the bank. It was such an emotionally draining experience, and the adrenaline rush, you know, was so dramatic. So this time, you know, my experience with Shinimo was much more peaceful.
Nice.
And much more satisfying. So, it was just one of those days when it was a really nice traverse walk up the creek. And it turns out, so after we left the junction of Flint and Shinimo, where we filled up our water bottles, we started running into water again.
Oh,
So it's seasonal, you know.
Uh-huh.
You can't count on it,
right?
But it's likely there, right? So I mean, it was here and there in multiple spots. So we continued on up and wound up camping. So the plan now is to go up the Flint Tuna Saddle Break, right?
Right.
The red wall on the north end of Sagittarius Ridge there, and we were going to head out there the next day to get back to the car. So we decided to camp right at the base of that climb, climb out. And nice little spot there. And I'd actually camped there in 73 on that long trip. So, and I was kind of, this was kind of an interesting endeavor, because this was going to be the repeat of when I did that climb through up the Flint, the break in Flint, the red wall break, and I was pretty scared going up that climb. Of course, I was by myself, and
right.
I had just spent that day, you know, dealing with Shinimo, and I'd also spent a day, you know, dealing with a week before dealing with the Pete's Creek, you know, flooding, etc. So I was kind of on edge that whole time, and I had a bad recollection of this red wall climb. So It was kind of like a little bit of foreboding in my mind.
Mm.
But of course, I was with Art and Bruce this time, so
mm-hmm.
I didn't think anything, you know, could go wrong.
Yeah.
So we had a nice night there, and then in the morning, Art and I wanted to go up. Art in particular wanted to go up Gowan Abyss.
Okay.
And so we left Bruce behind, and the two of us took our day packs and walked all the way up Gowan. To the dry fall there, and is that one you've been up?
No.
Yeah, it's spectacular up there. It's
cool.
A really nice walk. It's very straightforward. We actually saw some tracks in there, and Art found a pocket knife, a folding pocket knife that somebody had dropped, and so you can get all the way up, well, pretty far up into the red wall, and then there's the typical dry fall. And then it's this huge, flat, open bench or platform underneath the dry fall, you know. And so, typically when you have these dry falls, there'll be like a boulder pile there'd be a pool there maybe or a mud flat and then boulders all around. This was just a huge open expanse. Like, I guess there'd been at one point a huge gush of water through there that had just carried everything away. It was very bare, and then right in the middle of it, there was like a there's like a 40-foot pillar of travertine.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like an altar. Huh.
So, you know, so it basically had a spring at one point that was dripping water, drip, 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 and made this travertine pillar.
Yeah.
Huh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, a very neat spot. And I called it the altar, right?
Oh, cool.
The Gawain altar, right? And so it was really neat place to get up into. And I know Art had wanted to go up in there and get into Gawain for a long time. So, but of course, you don't get through the Red Wall, and you know, you have to turn around and come back. And on the way back down, I said to Art, I'd like to go up and see what we can find in Kanabinets Canyon. So that's a tributary to Gawain that comes down from the plateau, and it's about halfway from Flint to the Dry Fall in Gawain, and it's on the east side of Gawain. And so I left him there in the bed of Gawain, and then I headed up into Kanabinets. And again, it was one of these things where, you know, you went up as far as you could, but there was if I could see, you know, through the vegetation that there was a possible climb around, and I could potentially get a little bit higher, and who knows. And by this time, I was pretty high up in the Red Wall, too, so there's even more motivation, right? But I knew I had to get back, right, because we had to get out of the canyon that day. So I turned around at that point and then went down and rejoined Art, and we went back down and rejoined Bruce then at our campsite. And at that point, then, we put the packs on and headed up the slope that takes you up to this break in coming up out of Flint.
Right.
And you've done that, right? Haven't you?
No, because I bypassed that. I went over from the Flint Tuna Saddle to Evans and connected my line then down to the river. So
okay.
I haven't done this Red Wall route you're talking
about. Okay. Well, I mean, you could handle it, no problem. It's not that big a deal. But the thing is that when I came up it, I didn't know where the route went. I just got this from Harvey, right? And
yeah.
I remember Harvey talking at the time that writing that it was one of the stiffer routes that he had done. And so, but anyways, the three of us headed up there, and you basically follow this north aligned ridge of alluvium to get to the base of the Red Wall cliffs, and then you traverse a few hundred meters to the east to get to the actual break. And as you're doing this traverse, you can look up and you can see several options for climbing, and,
yes.
And Steck describes these. And the first one, I remember we came to, and he described it as a 30-foot scary climb up.
Right.
And so, you know, we could actually see some sling hanging off the top of this climb. And so I started up with my pack on, and I just said, forget it, you know. This is just way too steep.
Hmm.
And so we continued following the ledge around to the east, and you get to what Steck described as the less scary 20-foot up climb. And this is where I obviously went in 73, because it was fairly straightforward. It's simple face climbing, although we did pass packs. So what the way it worked out was we skipped the 30-foot scary climb. We continued around and to the 20-foot climb, which we looked at and figured we could do, and we dropped our packs there. And Art worked his way back along the route we had come, managed to go up and get above that 30-foot climb, and he actually retrieved that sling. So in actuality, one wouldn't need to do that 30-foot climb. You know, it's kind of redundant. You don't need to do it at all, because you can bypass it.
There's a number of ways through there. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Art brought that sling back.
Cool.
And we used that to haul our packs.
Okay.
But while he was doing that, I went around. I followed the ledge around to the north, and there's a beautiful chimney there in the Red Wall. And I had seen, went from down in Flint with my glasses, I could see a cairn at the top of that chimney.
Oh, interesting.
On top of the red wall. So that's why I wanted to check that out. And it turns out it's very simple to just go up this chimney. I mean, there's like a 6-foot section where, you know, it's got to be, it's a little exposed, but no problem. And it gets you through all the red wall so easily. So that's the way to go. But I went down and I returned to the other two guys, and I said, you know, I told them what I'd found, but we were already there.
Right.
And they had already actually started hauling the packs up the scary 20-foot climb.
Okay.
It's not like they had to haul the whole 20 feet, but,
yeah.
But you know, we were doing that, so it was already underway. So we just did that and went up. And it was actually, you know, totally uneventful, like so many of these things. You have a scary experience, and then you come back 20 years later, and you don't know what it was all about.
Right.
You know?
You go around the corner and go, oh, there's a walk-up right here. Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. How come I didn't find that 25
yeah,
years ago,
exactly.
You know? Yeah. Anyways, a nice ending to a kind of a little bit of a foreboding experience for me. So by the time, you know, we'd spent the day going up Gawain and coming back and then negotiating this red wall climb, and by the time we got to the top, it was getting pretty late in the day, and we just made our camp right there at the top of the red wall. Yeah, and on a nice flat shelf there. And I remember we put up Art's tarp because it was threatening.
Hmm.
And I slept under the tarp and had a miserable night, and he slept out and had a great night.
Hmm.
So it was interesting. There was no rain at all, so he obviously made the right call on that. So anyways, it was the only bad night's sleep I had on the whole trip, which was kind of disappointing, but... The next morning, we packed up, and that's right. I had mentioned earlier that we were supposed to go out to the rim that day, but we hadn't thought that we realized we might not make it to the rim. So that's, you know, when we camped at the top of the red wall, that was realizing the lesser of our ambitions, but at least we had gotten up through
it. You still have a ways to go, and it's steep climb.
Yeah, it is. It's so you walk along the top of the red wall there, and you're gradually ascending through the Supai talus, and you know there's a lot of pinyin and manzanita and
lots of brush
and steep talus. Loose talus. It's just slow going. You have to take your time negotiating it. A lot of opportunity for slipped ankles in there and whatnot. But eventually we worked our way up to the saddle.
You did.
Flint
Tuna
saddle.
Right.
Yeah. And so this is in the mid morning. And from there, Art and I had been through here a number of years prior when we did the climb of Evans Butte. And it turns out that there's a beautiful, if you continue up the gully heading for the rim, so this is due east of the saddle.
Yep.
I think we've talked about this, but there's a, you know, you start up the slope and west of the drainage. At the time, there was a beautiful deer trail that just switchbacked up this talus slope of Coconino and got you up through a huge amount of the talus very quickly and readily. Now, interestingly, I was back there a few years ago with Mark Coleman when we did the climb of Charybdis Butte, and that we found very little of that trail anymore.
Interesting.
So
huh.
It is interesting how these trails kind of...
Come and go,
you know, through time.
Hmm.
And, you know, one year you can have a fabulous deer trail, and then it's almost gone the next year, so...
Huh.
Anyways, this time it was really good, and so we made very, very quick time up through there, and then it's steep though, and by the time you get there at the top of the Coconino, you do have to do some climbs, short climbs, through the Torweep Cliff, I believe it is, a cliff of Torweep, and we haul our packs up that.
Mm.
And then from there, it's just a straightforward route finding to get up through the Kaibab and onto the rim. So, you know, a pretty uneventful day, but that's the way you like them. And from there, then we had to walk about, I don't know, 8 or 10 miles, I guess, on the Point Sublime Road
right.
back to where the car was parked. And I have this wonderful picture It's on my computer screen every few hours, right? And it's just a picture of walking that road in the fall. So imagine the fall colors on the aspen and, you know, the ponderosa and the spruce. And up ahead of me is Art walking along, you know, with his backpack on. And it's just a beautiful picture of the North Rim experience, you know, with the gorgeous spruce fir forest, the aspen turning color, and you know your best friend hiking there ahead of you on the trail. So
really
neat ending for that trip. So yeah, that was a really fun trip overall, and I have really good memories of it on one level. But interestingly, I reread my notes about this trip a little while ago, and at the end of the notes, I had written in there that the three of us talked about it, and we agreed it was the least favorite of our trips together.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know whether that was the heat, whether it was the logistics challenges of scrambling from Tuna to Clear Creek, or just what, you know, but maybe it was my disappointments not getting through the red wall or whatever. Anyways, that was our collective thinking at the time.
Okay.
And but still, you know, very as you know, as I've tried to recount, I still have very fond memories of a lot of the experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a difficult hike in Grand Canyon is always a lovely thing, you know, just because you're there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And it's sometimes lovely just to finish it, too.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's right.
Get it over with.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to take us next time?
Okay, well, the next couple of years, we started not slowing down, but doing shorter trips.
Okay.
So the next trip we did together was with Art, and this is going to be in April of 2009.
Okay.
And Vesta Temple and an attempt on Castor. And then we have a number of shorter trips after that. So
okay.
We got plenty to talk about. But
good. All right. Well, that sounds good. We'll pick up April 2009 on our next interview. How about that?
Well, that sounds great. I'm having so much fun recounting
these
trips to you.
Well, this is wonderful. well, with that, this will conclude part 24. Of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart. Today is November 28th, 2021. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.